From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. North Korea is a perennial problem, and a lot of experts have been working on trying to tackle the problem of North Korea's nuclear program. At the end of last year, I happened to read a new report that had a little bit of a different take on how to tackle this issue, or at least how to tackle one part of this issue. This report, which is by one of our good friends, Skip Vincenzo, is called An Information-Based Strategy to Reduce North Korea's Increasing Threat: Recommendations for ROK and U.S. Policymakers. As we've talked about both here on the podcast and in general, there are a lot of ways that people are trying to use information to target the people of North Korea to try to open their minds to what's going on in the world around them. But this is a little bit different. This is specifically targeting the North Korean elites and looking at a possible scenario in which they may be the key to preventing a major disaster. So I decided to sit down with Skip to talk to him about this report, his policy recommendations, and how it fits in with what we're already doing to try to address the nuclear threat coming from Pyongyang. So Skip, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
No problem. Happy to be here, John.
So you begin the executive summary for this report with this quote, and it really stood out to me. Deterrence works until it doesn't. And this is from Sir Lawrence Friedman. And I really like the choice of this quote, and I think it opens the report well. Can you give us a little bit of an explanation why you chose to open this way and how it fits in with your findings?
Yeah, certainly I'd be happy to, Jenna. But first, let me just say that because I'm still in the Navy, these are simply my views. It doesn't represent the Navy or the government in any way. It's simply that based on my experience in the Korea and those that, who assist me write it, it's opinion. So there's nothing would be considered classified or anything about it. The report itself had a Pentagon review and security review, et cetera. So just want to put that out there in front to leave it to anybody's listening concerns. But yes, in answer to your question, the quote that the deterrence works until it doesn't from Sir Lawrence Friedman was actually something that a longtime mentor, a retired Special Forces Colonel David Maxwell, used to always tell me when I used to work for him on several cases in Korea. When we talk about our strategy on Korean Peninsula. In this particular case, the report itself, as I try to lay it out, is that the nuclear and missile threat is changing the dynamic. And we can't deter some of these things. For instance, we've never really deterred provocations. We limit what he'll do, what Kim Jong-un and North Korea does in provocation, but we don't deter it. We haven't deterred the development of nuclear weapons and missiles, and we cannot deter a collapse of the Kim regime if that were to happen, or a miscalculation, just some kind of provocation. If you read the report, the scenario that I lay out is really a miscalculation, how that takes us to a very dangerous place. And so when we think about North Korea, my concern is that a nuclear-armed North Korea, a nuclear-armed Kim Jong-un with the ability to strike the United States, the deterrence that value for him enables him to reach much higher on the provocation line, which could rapidly lead to miscalculation. And in that regard, deterrence wouldn't work. Certainly, we can defeat an attack of the regime. The alliance is strong. We defeat a conventional attack. But outside that boundary, a gambit to use nuclear blackmail to force political and economic concessions backed up by violent provocations could lead to miscalculations.
Right. So basically, your recommendation, which is kind of reflected in the title of this report, is rather than using some of that conventional deterrence thought, but to create a broad information campaign targeting North Korean elites. Can you give us an idea of what such a campaign might look like and why you think this would be a good way to address North Korea moving forward?
Yes, certainly. But let me first take a step back. I think deterrence is important, and I think what we're doing, the exercises, things are vital. You know, the things we're doing now keeps the situation in a box. It has for a long time. A lot of good alliance effort and work, which I've been part of since I joined the Navy 20-something years ago. You know, there's a lot of people working very hard to create the stable situation we have, so we can't throw that out. But I think as the dynamic changes with nuclear weapons and missiles, this campaign would be basically to give North Korean elites and the populace general hope that there's future for them after the Kim regime. Right now they live, and they've always lived under a dynamic where this is essentially a gun to their head and a gun to their family's head. And so if they do something that steps out of line, both they and their families suffer. But come the point of an impending war where a miscarriage has occurred and a war is happening or getting ready to happen, or the regime's getting ready to collapse, at that point, they need to have hope that there's another option for them. And as things are now, their machine is programmed to resist at all costs, and the alliance is programmed to defeat the attack and push forward. And so a miscarriage could quickly lead to a large kinetic war, which does a lot. But if we were to offer them hope and offer them another potential possibility, at that one point when the gun is finally removed from their head, when the regime is collapsing, or it's obvious that Kim Jong-un has made a fatal miscalculation of what's happening, perhaps the intent is that they would give them another option to reach out to us to not fight. And so what the campaign may look like, for example, it's broad policy discussions, it's putting policies in place that are credible, that convince North Koreans that the alliance is serious, that South Korea is serious, that, you know, while there may be accountability for those who do bad things, those that support peace, those who do good things, have a future in their society. One of the things that I've, you know, in the development of this project, some of the people that we worked with, one of the things I want to mention was that some of the lessons we can take from Iraq to apply to Korea is we don't want to debathify, we don't want to ban the army, you know, so to speak. Clearly, North Korean armies have very powerful dated equipment, but still very powerful and lethal. If you want them to turn into a bunch of insurgents, give them hope that for the ends, you still have a job, and the elites, you still have a place in society. This is your country, you'll still have a place. You'll be part of South Korea, you'll be part of the Korean Republic of Korea, and you'll be a citizen and taken care of. Now, how would you do that? That's, again, the policy discussions, both, you know, open, and you can hold a event to back them up. And one of the examples I used, that you hold a big, an open, unclassified conference, come in and talk about this kind of issue, what would happen, North Korean miscalculation of class, what does that look like? And just bring it to open discussion without trying to message it. But at the end of it, wrap it up with someone rather high up in the ROC and the U.S. administration speak, you know, as part of the overall, to the press this there, and then speak directly to North Korea and say, well, you know, we certainly hope the news of this discussion gets to North Korea. And if you're an elite and you hear this, or you hear you're an angry North Korean soldier, you hear it through a cousin or a brother who's defected, that these kind of talks are going on, it is credible. You do have options. If, for example, if you're in charge of the missile forces or artillery, you know, do you really want to go to war? Or do you want to perhaps, your family has hope if you don't act? And that's the kind of message that we need to have. So the campaign could be a number of ways we can run it, but things like that would bring credibility.
Right. So one reason I think this is particularly relevant is that there has been news of several high-level defections and also rumors of growing discontent among elites and military in North Korea. So it seems like the time might be ripe for a targeted campaign like what you're suggesting. So what would be the kind of messages that you would try to send to those who are maybe already fed up or already looking for some sort of messages like this, and also to those who haven't yet started questioning the regime?
Well, I think that's a good question. But I think to answer that, you have to understand what the perspective of these people are. The people that, you know, I mean, put yourself in their shoes, their children, anything they do puts them and their family at risk, especially the higher up they go. And believe me, North Korea has a very good or very entrenched security service system. And there's a lot of books out there. If you read some of Mr. Robert Collins' works on the way the government's set up and the way they monitor their people. If you're a North Korean elite up there, you're not doing anything that's good, that's going to get your family put in a gulag or killed. And so the defection you see are usually when they can take their families with them. And defectors won't really want to talk about what happens to the people behind it. And you never want to discuss it, because I'm sure it's a very painful subject for them. But in that regard, if you look at the messages to those people, if you understand that, the message is the same. This is not about regime change. This is not about doing something right now. This is about at the time when now the gun is taken from your head. When the ambassador from England, when he defected, you know, essentially the gun was from his head. He knew he could get away with it. He'd get his family and he left. In this event of a collapse, you're now in North Korea. You're living in North Korea. You have your finger on a button to fire a missile. The regime's coming down and you know it. What do you do? Do you fire the missile and be part of a war that's probably going to end up the death of you and your family and those around you? Or do you pick up the phone, reach out, pretend something doesn't work? You know, it's, when it gets to that point, you'd like to do is have as much things in place already in terms of ideas of what their options are so that they make the decision we want them to make, not what they feel they have to make. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very fine line and it's very complicated, but something that it is we need to be talking about. So
I think that's the big thing, is there's got to be discussion on it. And the more discussion we have at higher levels of credibility, it's not an easy discussion, especially in Korea, the politics in Korea, there's a lot of emotion on this. But I think that the risk of not having it is that we're going to get forced into a situation where it could get a lot worse really quick.
Right. So people have been very much focused on this issue on North Korea, especially since there has been an escalation of provocations, including a spate of missile tests and two nuclear tests in 2016. In response, the international community has continued to strengthen sanctions, but I think many are in agreement that more needs to be done or something different needs to be done. How does your policy recommendation fit in with what we're already doing, especially given these high tensions?
Well, I think the thing to consider when we talk about how it fits in, I think you have to first understand what is our end state, what is our goal. Truly, it's regime stability and stabilize the peninsula. It's what everybody really wants. But I don't think regime stability is something that Kim Jong-un can guarantee forever. And I think from his calculus and the calculus of the guys around him, they probably feel they have to do something long-term to change the trajectory they're on, the economies. It may, depending on what you read, it proves there's a market stuff. But that also brings stability challenges. It brings information challenges. And the indication is that the long-term slope isn't good. So if that's his objective, what's ours? It's our objective to simply prevent him from getting nuclear weapons, which he's doing, and missiles, which he's doing. So why are we? What is our objective for sanctions? You know, the sanctions have made life difficult, and they've probably had an effect on slowing down some of the development, but it's hard to say that when they have accelerated their testing. But the guy that wrote the sanctions, Josh Stanton, I know him, he gave me some mentoring along the way. Those are phenomenal sanctions that him and the people he worked with put together. And they really lay out a good set of tools. But what do we expect if they succeed? If we really are able to get the kind of enforcement that's envisioned, what do we expect is going to happen? Do we think Kim Jong-un, having developed his weapons capabilities and regime, having done all these horrible things with people, if our sanctions were to put regime-threatening pressure, which is really the only pressure that's really going to make them change what they're doing, we're back him in the corner. Is he going to react violently and try to change the dynamic, or is he going to give up and go and negotiate? When he sees what happened to Libya, Gaddafi, in Iraq, Saddam Hussein, and Romania, and all these other despots and such, who didn't end well for them. So I think we have to consider what we expect. So the strategy works well with what we're already doing. Continue the sanctions, continue the deterrence, but have as your backup to when it goes out of control, things beyond your control take place, you've reduced the threat, you've reduced the risk so that you can drive events to an acceptable end state at an acceptable cost.
Right. So you mentioned briefly earlier, but I want to go back to this, the German example, and you use that in the report to illustrate how targeting elites can help shift the calculus and smooth transitions of power. So obviously there's a lot of differences between North Korea and the German case, but how can you expand a bit on how they might be similar or what some of these differences might mean for the North Korean scenario?
Yes, of course. A lot of people talk about the German example. I think there is merit to it, but clearly, like you said, in this most people will quick to point out that Germany is not North Korea and vice versa. But I think the thing that matters is you have regimes, the elites in charge of a population, and they've not always been nice to them, and they're afraid of the consequences of when the regime ends. And the less options they have, the fewer the alternatives they have, the harder they're going to resist. So when it became apparent that the wall was possibly getting ready to fall, unification Germany is going to happen, Helmut Kohl came out with his 10-point plan, I believe it was called, or that's what it's been paraphrased as, that articulated credibly that if you're an East German, you're going to become a German citizen, and your rights are going to be German citizen rights, and you're going to have retirement, you're going to have all the things, you have a future. And that largely helped, you know, ensure a relatively peaceful transition, even though a few years before, you know, we were ready to go to nuclear conflict with each other, and it could have gone really ugly. But because they were given hope when it mattered, by and large, they reached for it. And the contention is that not all North Koreans, but many of them given hope that there's a better alternative, when it becomes apparent and they actually have the ability to make a decision on what's the best thing for them and their family at that moment, you want them to know there's an option. If they don't know there's an option, they're probably going to do what they've been programmed to do. But if they think there's an option, I can survive and I'll be okay. A good number of them are, you know, I would think would like any human being, like you, me, or anybody would make a decision in the best interest of their family at that particular moment. I think that's why they're similar at the end of the day.
It's a really fascinating topic. As I mentioned, I've, you know, been really interested by using information for various things, including, you know, public diplomacy and things like that towards North Korea. So this was really interesting conversation. I want to end by just giving you a chance. Is there anything else you would like to add or anything else you think our listeners should know about your reports before we go?
Well, Jenna, for your listeners who are interested, they can download a copy of the report and view it. That it was co-published by four different organizations, the Center for New American Security, the Georgetown Review, the U.S. Korean SAS, and the National Defense University. All four have it on their websites. If you look it up, easy to navigate and find it on their website. But I, you know, and if they're really interested in the report itself, at the bottom there's a recommended reading list by the people that helped me. Some of their works in there as recommended reading. It's a really good resource for folks if they're interested.
All right, thanks so much to Skip for taking his time to talk with me. I will put a link to his report in the description for this episode, so you can definitely take a look. I highly recommend it. Let me just say thank you once again for joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we'll see you here again next week.